This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Every one of us understands that racism is wrong, and nearly everyone recognizes racism when they see it. At least we recognize it in others. Racism is not quite so recognizable in ourselves. And yet unconsciously, we're always making decisions about the people we meet every day, decisions such as who belongs to us and who belongs to them. Learning to recognize how we make such decisions is the first step towards overcoming racism. Shakil Chowdhury is an educator and a consultant. He's also the founder of Anima Leadership, and he's just written a new book, just published this month, and it's called Deep Diversity, Overcoming Us Versus Them. And Shakil joins us on the phone from his home in Toronto. Hello, Shakil.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Now, you started your book by describing a study that was carried out at the University of Toronto. Can you tell me a bit about that study?
Sure. This was a study between York University, Yale, and I believe UBC. And this study basically started like this. A young woman, Nina, walks into a waiting room. She's a university student, and she signed up for to be part of a psychology study. And so she's waiting for the psychology study to begin, and she's in a waiting room. And in the waiting room, she happens to see two other students who also seem to be waiting for the study. She notices that one is a black student, the other one's a white student, and the black student forgets something in the hall. I believe it's his cell phone, and walks out of the room to retrieve the phone, and in doing so, accidentally bumps the white student's leg. After the black student exits the room, the white student uses a really harsh racial slur, and says the N-word. And the whole study, in fact, deals with what Nina's response in that waiting room is. What she doesn't realize is that these two Confederates, as they're called, are in fact actors. And her response to the racist slur being made is in fact the study. So that's how it gets set up. And now there's three different things. There's people like Nina who are actually experiencing this incident firsthand. There are another group of people who watch this incident play out, and they're called the watchers. They watch it on video. And then there's another group of people who just read this, and they're called the readers. So there's three different groups all having some experience with this: one group reading, one group watching, and one group actually physically experiencing this interaction. So what's interesting is that the reader group and the watchers group kind of do what you would expect people to do, which is that they're like outraged and they're upset that this has happened, and they can't believe this has happened. And what's also interesting is that they're also asked, of these two students in the next stage of the study, who would you want to partner with? And of course, the vast majority of the students talk about choose the black student. Right? Now, here's the thing: is that from the people who actually experienced the situation, first of all, no one says anything, and there's like a couple hundred students who participate in this. No one says anything, and when they're asked later by the researcher, you know, sort of how they're feeling, this kind of thing, no one even indicates that they're upset in any way. And most telling is that when asked who they would want to partner with, the white student or the black student for the next stage of the study, a remarkable 70% of the students chose the white student as their partner. And what's also interesting is that the students who are all participating in this represent the diversity of a university in Toronto, extremely diverse. So not just white students, but students of all different backgrounds, except for black students. Black students were out of that because, of course, we're looking at white and black dynamic here. So that was a little startling in terms of results. And what this study basically shows is that the vast majority of us are terrible at predicting what we think we'll do in a future situation, what we think we will feel in a certain situation. So observing something and reading about it is very different than actually being in it. And so that's fundamentally what the study demonstrated, which is shocking, to say the least.
Well, I remember when I was reading it, feeling much the same, because I think about, you know, experiences I have, say, on the bus, for instance. Probably like a lot of people, if I experience some racism, well, in Vancouver, is probably more likely to be against someone from East Asia, I'm probably just going to cower in my seat and hide my head and pretend I didn't even see anything. Whereas, like the students in the study, if I'd read about it in the newspaper, yeah, I'd be outraged. So I found it looked like the study was trying to distinguish how we think intellectually what racism is versus how we feel it or viscerally when we experience it.
It's true. And I mean, you know, on some level, intervening in a situation is hard for most people, right? But what was shocking to me was not just that people didn't intervene. I was surprised that there was no one that intervened or said anything. But what was most shocking was that in the next stage of the experiment, they still actually chose 70% chose the white student. They wanted to be that student's partner still. And this is a person who has just like uttered the ugliest racial slur you can against black people. Like this is quite remarkable. And so that's the part that's actually the biggest twist in the study that I think really sent me over the edge, thinking, wow, that's amazing. And some people ask the question, well, maybe they wanted to educate this student, and so that's why they chose him as a partner. And there was like no educating done. That's not what sort of happened afterwards, and in fact, you know, informally, there was also some discussions about how it seemed like, you know, a number of students wanted to actually befriend this student. So it just kind of speaks to how intense anti-black racism and anti-black bias is in society, and also, you know, how much white people can still benefit. Even when they're saying the most outrageous things, and this is, again, in real time. And, I mean, come on, let's think about this. What better group of people do you think would stand up and intervene in society than university-educated? And the study was done, I think, like in 2010, 2011, like certainly in the last few years. And in the world's most, one of the world's most diverse cities, like the odds just don't get any better that you think if someone's going to intervene, it will be from this group of people. And yet, not only did they not intervene, they also, en masse, chose the white student over the black student, the white student who said incredibly racist things. That's who they wanted to partner with. And that, to me, is the most stunning part of that experiment, and really just shows how intense anti-black racism is in society.
Now, what is the deep diversity model that you describe in your book?
Well, deep diversity is really to help us have a conversation about exactly this kind of discrimination, which is subtle, which is hard to detect, meaning that, you know, it's in choices that seem innocuous in some ways. So systemic discrimination and subtle racism are really hard to talk about. Overt forms, way easier, because they're obvious. Most people can discuss them. But to have a conversation about subtle and systemic racism, the things that I've outlined are, there's four areas, and these are sort of research-based areas as well as areas that I've really been thinking about over the last 20 years working in this field. One is looking at emotions, the invisible and controlling nation, the nature of emotions. Two is looking at bias and how we all carry what's known as implicit bias or unconscious prejudice. The third is looking at tribes, the idea of how belonging is a key driver of human behavior, and that ends up creating groups that we belong to and groups that we don't belong to, in groups and out groups. And the last area is power, socioeconomic, political, and how that entrenches majority groups that are dominant in society and minority groups or non-dominant groups, and that there's a very strong dynamic. And these dynamics are witnessed in any society we go in, and that basically majority groups or dominant groups create society in their likeness and to benefit people most like them. And that's hard to kind of take on some level, because as Canadians, we're very well-intentioned. We value fairness. And yet what's really important to recognize is that so much of what is happening is unconscious. And that's sort of the defining question of my book, which is, what happens if a significant amount of our interactions with people that we perceive to be different than ourselves, especially racially, are influenced by things happening below the radar of awareness, hidden even from ourselves? And so these four factors, bias, tribes, emotions, and power, can help us think about and surface what's hard to discuss, because systemic discrimination, just as a final point, only becomes visible when we collect data. And look at the experience of thousands and thousands of people, and then we go, oh, wait a minute, why is there a difference between men and women? And that's where sexism comes in. Why is there a difference between how racial minorities and Aboriginal people are being treated in the healthcare system or the criminal justice system compared to their white peers? And we see data demonstrates that there are big, big gaps, and these gaps exist in every institution, in every part of society.
Can you describe for me maybe a couple of the steps that that people can take, you know, once they sort of identify the problem, about how they can start to overcome that?
Sure. So to be very clear, like, all of us have biases. I mean, I'm in a situation where I uncover my biases relatively regularly, and this is my life's work. I have misjudged people based on their names. I have underestimated people because they had a disability. And all these things are automatic and unconscious. So the first thing is, there's many things to do, but I'll highlight just maybe two or three things. One, accept that we all have biases. Accept that we all have unconscious attitudes and preferences, and that they influence our attitudes and frequently our choices towards other people. So admitting that we all have this problem is the starting point. Two, then be on the lookout for when these biases emerge, when our attitudes kind of show up, when there are moments where we feel surprised, where we underestimated or overestimated somebody. And then three, to do some soul searching and some self-learning about why that might be, to name it, to identify it, but then also start to figure out how we can counter it. And that's usually through some form of self-education and understanding how discrimination works in society and so on. So those would be at least the first three things. Start with admitting it. Two, be on the lookout for it. Three, you know, do some self-education when we realize we have these biases. And four, the last thing, and this is very important, is compassion. Compassion is really important to this work because it's making mistakes. This work around diversity and inclusion and learning about other people is all about making mistakes, and making mistakes is really, really difficult for us. It fills us with all kinds of difficult feelings, and that's where compassion comes in, because we got to go easy on ourselves too and go, okay, wow, I made a mistake. How do I learn from it? And that's really important.
Well, it's a fascinating book. I thoroughly enjoyed reading it, and I wish we had more time to talk about it. Thanks again, Shaquille.
Well, thank you so much, Jim, for having me on the show.
I've been speaking with Shakil Chaudhry. He's an educator and consultant based in Toronto. His new book is called Deep Diversity, Overcoming Us Versus Them, and it's just been published by Between the Lines Books.